Social world. Now, this class is about the ethics of eating. What are the ethics of eating? What is involved in eating? The first ethic is a major ethic in Jewish law, that is the importance of staying alive, the importance of being healthy. It's a major principle in Jewish law. And it's the core of Jewish thought, is the sanctity of the human being. We have to, nearly at all costs, not at all costs, but nearly at all costs, try and stay alive as much as possible. Human life is a supreme value. The Torah tells us, and you will live by them, implying you will live by the Torah, and not die by them. In fact, there are only three laws that cannot be violated to save a life. That is murder, idolatry, and immorality. Otherwise, every other law in Judaism must be given up to save a life. The Talmud asks a rather revealing set of questions. Can you violate the Sabbath to move the holy body of dead King David? Or can you violate the Sabbath to save the life of a one-day-old infant? The Talmud says, if King David is dead, you cannot violate the Sabbath. It's too late. But to save the life of a little baby, of course you can break the Shabbat. Similarly, many people associate eating pig meat as the epitome of anti-Jewishness. Other people feel that fasting on Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the Jewish calendar, is of the most important laws in Jewish tradition. The question we must ask is, if you are starving, and it is Yom Kippur, and the only way you can save your life from starving is by eating pig on Yom Kippur, what should you do? And the answer is, you can eat the pig on Yom Kippur to save a life. You can enjoy it as well, there's no idea. But why? Because life is a supreme value. Imagine you happen to witness a car accident on Shabbat, and you find a victim that you are sure will not live for more than a few hours. Can you violate the Shabbat to help someone who can live only a few more hours? And the answer is yes, you can. Why? Life is precious. Even a few more seconds, even a few more hours of life is precious. So that's the first ethic, is the importance of human life and keeping healthy and staying out of danger, which we're going to talk about now as the second ethic. So first thing is, life is supreme. Second thing is, staying healthy. The Torah says, and this is right at the beginning of Genesis and Parashat Noah, when Noah was saved from the ark, God tells him, and surely the blood of your lives will I require, and the hand of every beast will I require it. And at the hand of a man, at the hand of every man's brother will I require the life of man. So we find that over here God is telling us, you are responsible for your lives. So take heed to yourself and watch over your lives diligently. So we see the Torah is warning man, it is forbidden to place ourselves intentionally in danger. We have to stay healthy and care about our lives. And this brings us to a very important point, which is, whose body is it anyway? And this is Samson Raphael Hirsch, very famous German Jewish philosopher. He lived in about 1850s in Frankfurt am Main. He's the chief rabbi of Frankfurt. And he wrote a great many books. If you look in any Jewish library, you'll find a great many books by Samson Raphael Hirsch. The famous ones are his commentary on the whole Torah. It's called the Hirsch Commentary. He also wrote a couple of important books called Chorev, which is one of the name of Mount Sinai. And over there he discusses Jewish philosophy. And he says, many religious people believe that their bodies belong to them. And if they allow their bodies to be unhealthy, overweight, etc., that is not a religious issue. So he reminds them, he says, no person has the right to injure themselves, to ruin themselves, to murder themselves. Everyone bears the duty to preserve themselves physically. They may not weaken themselves. God's word calls to us, do not commit suicide. Do not injure yourself. Do not ruin yourself. Do not endanger yourself. Do not weaken yourself. Preserve yourself. You have no more right upon your own life, upon your own body, than you have upon your brothers. You are destroying God's temple. So the second ethic is that a human being is God's temple. The body is the house of the soul. The soul is a spark of God, and therefore the body is the temple of God. So the bottom line is, a person is not themselves. They don't belong to themselves. We talked about this. We talked about living wills. Our body is not ours to do whatever we please with it. our body is given to us on loan from God. God's, here's the body, look after it. It's in trust for you to live as long as you can, to be a vehicle for the soul in this world. So therefore, a person's got to avoid anything that may possibly impair their health, and that includes food. We find that Jewish tradition is very concerned with keeping people out of danger. And yet very seldom do you find rabbis talking about the laws involved in maintaining health. We find the rabbis, there's a section in the Code of Jewish Law regarding dangers to health. One of them is, the rabbis in those days warned us not to drink water which was left uncovered. In those days in the Middle East you had poisonous snakes. The snake may be thirsty, may drink the water, and some poison might fall into the water. So therefore the rabbi said, don't drink uncovered water. Do not eat or drink anything from unclean vessels. Before the laws of hygiene. It's interesting because in the Dark Ages, you know, the plague, Black Plague, bubonic plague hit Europe. And the non-Jews started killing Jews. Why? No Jews were dying. Hardly any Jews died in the plague. Little did they know the Jews had hygienic laws, which they got from rabbinical laws. The Jews were keeping hygiene, basic hygiene. You wash before you eat. You don't eat dirty food. You don't eat stale food. Do not drink from unclean vessels. Never eat with dirty hands and upon a dirty tablecloth. They warn us to not to eat animals that have eaten anything which is harmful to man, or which were killed or bitten by snakes, or by animals, wild animals. It's interesting, the Talmud discusses, I don't know if this is true scientifically, but it's interesting, the Talmud discusses animals which were clawed by wild animals. If a lion clawed an animal, the animal is still alive. The rabbis assumed there was poison in the claws. And today we know what it is. It's probably tetanus or some other thing, other kind of bite by a wild animal could cause rabies or other things. And therefore the rabbis called it poison. They didn't know what it was. They called it poison. Therefore, even though the animal was still walking around, it was considered a non-kosher, animal. The Rambam goes even further, and we're going to discuss that if we have some time. Our rabbis advise us, eat only when you are hungry. Drink only when you are thirsty. Never postpone going to the bathroom. Never eat yourself to oversatisfaction. If you can, work or exercise before meals. Always eat sitting down and rest after the meal. Do not sleep in the day. Why? Because of digestion. Do not sleep immediately after a meal, but wait 2 or 3 hours after the meal. So all this is advice the Rambam brings down. This is interesting. Maimonides, here, a book over here, called the Mishnah Torah. You can get this in English and Hebrew. Moses Maimonides called the Mishnah Torah. It's available in English and Hebrew. It's a set. We have it in our library if you want to have a look at it. It's about 15 volumes. Very beautiful, concise. This whole of Jewish law, 15 volumes. First section is called The Laws of Characters, Character Traits. And in this he discusses everything to do with personality and people and even diet. He was a doctor as well as a philosopher. And he was one of the first to discuss preventative medicine. So part of the preventative medicine is, very important part of it, is diet. He says, actually, he mentions three things. He says diet, exercise, and bowel movements. Three things which are very important for health. So part of the eating ethic is to eat only healthy foods. The support of health are work, moderation, care, and cleanliness. The Jewish law of netilat yadayim, before eating bread, a Jew has to wash hands, requires that, not only that, but we have to wash hands in the morning as well, but when we wake up. I mean, today we take it for granted. Most people wash their hands, wash their face. But in those days, people didn't even bother to wash hands. You find if you go to any restaurant, what do you find? A sign over there. All workers must wash hand after coming out of the bathroom. That's part of Jewish law. You don't have to regulate. That's part of Jewish law. So hygiene is built into what we call ritual today, includes laws, basic laws of hygiene. We are forbidden to touch our mouths, noses, ears, and eyes with unwashed, unclean hands. Because the rabbis say, the uncleanliness can go into the organs of the body. But we know today there's infections and other things, diseases which can travel, because the hands go all over the place and touch all over the place. And therefore, clean hands are very important to hygiene. The rabbis of the Talmud forbade the Jewish people from drinking water directly from a pipe or a stream or river if there was a slight remote chance there was something else in that water. There's no use. If you cannot see the water clearly, don't drink it. Don't drink water at night, the rabbi said. Today we have filters and other things. But in those days, who knows what could get in the water? So that's how careful they were. So to show how strong they felt about this, they bring a hypothetical case. It says 9 men drank from a barrel of water without knowing what was inside it. It was dark. And they were all healthy. Is the 10th man allowed to drink from that same barrel? The rabbis say no, just in case. You see how strict they made this law, that if there was still a remote possibility that something dangerous was in the water, they forbade a person to drink from that water. And we said before that an animal which ingested poison, even though it's literally slaughtered and it's theoretically it's kosher, the rabbi says it's not kosher. It has poison inside. We can extend that today to animals which are injected with hormones and other things which may cause sickness to man, which we don't know about. So you can argue that a veal calf, which is intentionally kept anemic and fed a diet of genetically engineered growth hormones and steroids, even if slaughtered according to Jewish law, might still technically be non-kosher because of what it ingests. The author of the Book of Education, which is also a very important book to get hold of, which goes through all the 613 commandments in the Torah, the Book of Education, according to the Parsha of the Week. So every week we read another section of the Torah. There's a book called The Book of Education, written in Spain by a 15th century Spanish rabbi who doesn't even put his name on the book. It's anonymous. The book is anonymous. We don't know who wrote the book. What he writes in his preface is, he writes this for the teenagers who are playing ball on the Sabbath, to give them something to do on the Sabbath. So in those times also they had problems in terms of educating the teenagers to Judaism. So he wrote this book called The Book of Education. Over there he discusses mitzvah number 546 and 547. And he writes over there, many things were prohibited by our sages in order to preclude damage. It is not befitting for a person who is bestowed with intelligence to endanger himself. Consequently, it is correct that we pay heed to anything that may cause a person harm. So an intelligent person is not going to cause damage to themselves. This is a very fundamental part of Jewish ethic. Similarly, we must be wary of situations which people are generally wary of. So people know this is dangerous, like something has a government health warning on it. So it's forbidden for a Jew to take part of it, like cigarettes. Comes with a government health warning. If the government saw fit to put a health warning on it, it must be dangerous. Even though they're getting taxes and they really want this, they want to collect the money, nevertheless, they saw fit to put a government health warning on it, a Jew should not involve themselves in it. Why? Because the bottom line is, as Samson Raphael Hirsch sums it up, if your body is to remain a healthy instrument, avoid anything that might destroy it. And take up everything into your way of life which brings it health and strength. And today we're more into it. We're more into healthy food, hopefully. We're more into exercise, we're more into doing less stressful forms of work. So it's very important. It's a big principle of Jewish faith, and the ethic of Jewish belief is a healthy body. Because the Rambam says, if the body is unhealthy, you cannot have a healthy soul. It's impossible to have a healthy soul in an unhealthy body. If a person is in hospital, sick, they cannot have a healthy soul. Because all these mitzvot you cannot do when you're in hospital. So the key to a healthy soul is also a healthy body. On the other hand, the danger, obvious danger, is body worship you get. A person spends, you know, his whole day in the gym building up the body and doesn't have any time for the soul. That's also bad. So there has to be a balance in life between a healthy body and a healthy soul. Let's just give a few stories from the Talmud regarding this. Rav Huna, who was one of the great rabbis in Babylon, who wrote the authored of the Talmud, the Babylonian Talmud, this is about 300 CE. He says, before the winter season, he would personally inspect all the walls in the town and order them to tear down any wall he found unsafe. If the owner could not afford to rebuild the wall, he paid for it personally. Obviously, he was a very wealthy individual. So this was like, in those days, they never had town council regulations regarding safety of walls and other things. There was no inspectors. So he became the inspector of the town, and he would pull down walls if they were dangerous. Rabbi Yanai said, never should a man stand in a dangerous place and think that God will miraculously save him. They're not allowed to rely on God. They're not allowed to rely on miracles to save a person. I can't cross a busy highway and say God is going to save me. That's called a chassid who is crazy, a mad chassid. A crazy chassid is a person who relies on miracles. I'm going to jump off the building. You know what? I believe in God. God is going to save me. That's a crazy chassid. We're not allowed to rely on miracles. Therefore, the rabbi said, don't walk under a shaky wall or a bridge or in a construction site. If it's a hard-hat area only, you don't go crazy and walk around there and say, you know, God is going to save me. Rabbi Yochanan says, a person shouldn't talk while they're eating. Why? In those days, the Romans, the custom was to lie down, recline when you're eating. They recline on sofas. They knew how to enjoy themselves when they're eating. They recline on the sofa. Rabbi Yochanan, he says, a person shouldn't talk while they're eating. Why? Just in case the food might go down the wrong pipe. So it's much more dangerous when a person's lying down and eating. It might go down the wrong pipe. The Torah commands the Jewish people to build a parapet for every roof. In those days, they had flat roofs, and they would use the flat roof to sleep on in the summer. It was hot inside, they would sleep on the roof, or to put their washing, the laundry, anything else. So therefore, the Torah says, put a fence around the roof. The fence had to be at least 40 inches high. This would apply also on steps. The banisters in Jewish law have to be, it's Jewish law, 40 inches high. Why? To prevent someone from falling and hurting themselves. Additionally, the rabbis of the Talmud spend much time and energy giving us advice on foods conducive to health. Without going into the list of foods that they believe to be good or bad for us, let it suffice to say that they earnestly believed in the importance of eating healthy food, and they felt it was a divine imperative, not merely a personal preference. It's important what a person eats. It's a law. And we're going to see, it's interesting, the Torah itself discusses this. What did the Jews eat in the desert for 40 years? Manna. What was manna? What was it? Okay, the Torah says it was kezera gad. And that's how it describes it. It calls it kezera. It's like the seed, some kind of seed, which they ground up and they made a flour and they ate bread. Some kind of seed. Coriander. The translation says coriander. We don't. The truth is, it's like a coriander seed. Whatever that means. It's like some kind of seed. But it was like a flour. What's the idea? What is the Torah teaching us? 40 years they existed on the flour. What is it teaching us? They had a high-protein diet, basically, with all the carbohydrates. Everything was in it. Like they send the astronauts to space. They give them these little pills. You know, like I think John Glenn was talking about it. What is he going to miss? He's going to miss the food. You can have a little couple of pills. And each of the pills includes the protein, whatever you need, whatever the human body needs, they give you. But you miss, you don't see any food. You don't see the sight of the food. And that's really, we're going to see, if we have time, we'll see what the Torah says about it, how the Jews complained. After wandering around and eating this bread, they said, we're sick of the food. It's the same thing every single day. But it was very healthy, very hygienic. Everything you desired, everything was required for the human body was there. But they complained. Why? Because it's not only what we eat, it's also how the food appears. And it's interesting, because today, in culinary arts, they discuss this, the people are not only worried about the taste of the food, it's not what the taste, but it's also how it appears to satisfy the person. Because the person doesn't only have to satisfy their stomach, they also have to satisfy their eyes. Which is interesting, because that's right at the beginning of Genesis. The Bible talks about the fruit of the tree. And God tells man, don't eat of the fruit of the tree of knowledge. So it says, Eve went out, and she sees the tree, and he says the fruit was good for food, and it was good for the eyes. So part of the desire of food is the sight of food as well. So it's not just today. Packaging is a multi-billion dollar industry. Why? Because the people know, all these companies know the importance of the sight of the food, and the sight not just the food, but the sight the package the food is in. And when they wrap the food elegantly, more people enticed to buy the food. So the wrapping is also very important. If you look at it, it's interesting. If you look at how God wrapped food, look how God wrapped the plants and how God wrapped the apples and the pears and the bananas. You look at the wrapping is not just practical, it's also aesthetic. If you look at the red apple and the green apple and the banana, it's enticing. It's amazing. God didn't just give us manna from heaven and just fall, which looked like a seed and that was it. He wrapped it, he packaged all the food to make it enticing for us. And the opposite with meat. I'm going to talk a bit about meat later on. But the opposite with meat, the meat looks the most unenticing. It looks disgusting. If you look at raw meat, there's nothing worse than looking at raw meat and looking at the chicken and peeling off the fats. Why? Why did God create it like that? If God wanted us to eat it, obviously, He'd make it look appealing, right? Well, that's another point, which I will talk about a bit about vegetarianism. So the human body. So we have so far, we have the ethic of keeping away from danger, the importance of life, the ethic of health, the ethic that the body is the temple to the soul. Then we have an ethic of personal cleanliness and hygiene. Judaism has a very clear tradition instructing the Jewish people in good health and good hygiene. The human body is compared to the sanctuary. It must be kept safe and clean. It must be respected and cared for and treated with dignity. The sages understood clearly the value of good hygiene and saw it as a religious act. Hillel said, "It is a mitzvah to bathe often in order to protect our health." Rashi, the famous biblical commentary, Rabbi Shlomo Yitzhaki of France, 10th century France, points out, "The man was created in the image of God, and therefore the body is holy. It must be sanctified and cared for." The rabbis wanted people to look at the Jewish people and say, "Blessed are you, God, that have this in your world." So it's important for a Jew to be clean, well kept, tidy, and not go around smelling and dirty, and that's one of the big problems. So Maimonides says religion includes, Jewish ethic includes health and hygiene. And we talked about the problem of keeping away from danger. So those are the major ethics in terms of food. The other ethics are more indirect in terms of, let's talk about compassion to animals. There are many laws in the Torah that involve the value of compassion for animals. To cause an animal pain and suffering is forbidden. And we're going to go through a couple of different laws in terms of compassion. This is called, in Jewish law, it's called Tsar Baalei Chaim, cruelty to animals. There's much discussion in the Talmud as to whether this law is a divine decree or a rabbinic law. According to Jewish law, it is forbidden to tie the legs of an animal or bird if it causes it pain. Interesting, just tie the legs, causes it pain. So many people ask the question, does an animal feel pain of an injury the same way the human body does? To this, Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch responds, "Man so easily forgets that injured animals' muscles twitch, just like human muscle, that maltreated nerves of an animal sicken like human nerves, that the animal being is just as sensitive to cuts, blows, and beatings as a man." So there's no difference in terms of the pain of an animal, and therefore we're restricted in terms of causing pain and suffering to an animal. So people, the animals do feel pain, and we have to be careful. One of the laws the Bible tells us about is muzzling an ox when it treads the corn. In those days, they never had grinders or threshers. They didn't have things to thresh the corn or wheat. So what they do was put the wheat on the floor and make the ox walk all over it. Today we'd say that's very unhygienic. It's like the old winemaking process in Italy, where they, you know, the people would walk all over the grapes. So they had the ox walking all over the corn and the wheat and the barley. The Bible tells us you shall not muzzle the ox when he treads the corn. Why? The animal is helpless, defenseless, dependent upon us, and has a desire to eat. It's working. Do not muzzle the ox. It's interesting. This also applies to human beings. If you hire a worker in your field to take fruits from the tree, to harvest the fruits of the tree, the worker is allowed to eat from those fruits as much as he can. He's allowed to eat as much as he wants while he is working, plucking the fruit. He's allowed to eat from those fruit, but he's not allowed to put them away to take home. So as long as he's allowed to eat as much as he needs for that day while he's working to... Why? Same thing. If there's cruelty to animals, how much more is there cruelty to man? So in a similar situation, a person who's in that situation also, well, you're not allowed to muzzle the worker. Forget about muzzling the animal. Muzzling the animal is not allowed, definitely muzzling a worker. Telling a worker you're not allowed to eat. I used to work in a bakery when I was a little kid, my summer holidays, you know. So the law of the bakery was you could eat as much as you wanted on the job. It was a Jewish bakery. Well, that's based on this idea. You can have bread. When you work there, you don't really feel like it. You feel sick. You get sick of the bread. You're smelling breadcrumbs, and the breadcrumbs on the floor, and you're involved with it. Really, there's not much you want to eat at that time. But that's a good law. So you're hungry, and you see the food. It's right in front of you. You've got to eat. So that's basic ideas. Rambam sums it up. The pain of animals is very great. There is no difference between the pain of people and the pain of other living things. Since love and tenderness of the mother for her young is not produced by reasoning, very interesting idea, but by imagination, by the emotions. And the animals have similar emotions. The animals have similar mother-child relationships. So you look after how I have a next-door neighbor who just had a dog who just gave birth. And look how the mother looks after her young. It's amazing how God put it into their little brains, you know. They have that emotion. It's not an insight. It's an emotion. It's an instinct. So therefore, that faculty exists not only in man, but also in most living things. That's why the Torah says, you will not kill the mother and her young on the same day, or the father and the young on the same day. You will not take the bird, the baby bird, and its mother on the same at the same time. You will shoo away the mother and take the bird. You're not allowed to take the bird and the mother at the same time. This is part of the ethic of not causing cruelty to animals. The Sefer HaChinuch, as we mentioned, the Book of Education, says the purpose of these laws is to instill in us a goodness of heart and a sensitive concern for our fellow man and for the animals. Whereas if we are concerned about the welfare of the animal, how much more so we should be concerned about the welfare of other people? So the Torah is showing us clearly it's not concerned with our successful farming methods, it's more concerned with compassion. It's not just efficient farming, it's also ethical farming, where we're more concerned about the ethics, the morals involved in raising animals, rearing animals. The rabbis extend the anti-muzzle law of Deuteronomy to many other circumstances, including that an animal doesn't have to work if a thorn is stuck in its mouth. It can't eat. You're not allowed to work the animal. If there's a lion lying nearby in wait and the animal's scared, you can't make the animal work. It's not concentrating on it. It can't focus on its job. If its offspring was lying nearby and the animal's yearning for its offspring, you can't make the animal work. Let the animal go and look after its young. It's interesting. If the animal was thirsty, give it water. You're not allowed to work it without water. If you spread leather over the threshing floor, apparently that's bad for the animal fields. Look, I'm standing on a dead animal. Has an instinct. Standing on a dead animal, standing on leather. If you shouted it, can you imagine? It is forbidden to shout the animal to make it work harder. Maybe except for a donkey. They don't want to work. Okay, in all these cases, the animal will be prevented from eating as it worked. And therefore, it's like putting a muzzle on it. See, the animal has a thorn in its mouth. It's like it's a muzzle. It can't eat. If the animal, you put leather over the food, it can't eat the food. You're threshing it under the leather. You can't eat the food. You're preventing it from eating. All these cases were to stop the ox from eating. The Torah tells us you should not plow with an ox and a donkey together. Why? So one of the reasons is because the ox has more strength than the donkey. The donkey is straining to catch up, and the ox is overexerting. Instead of an equal animal pulling the plow at the same time, the ox has to pull much harder. And therefore, that's one of the reasons. When it comes to food, who comes first? So Torah is interesting. Torah talks about this. Where in the Shema? Which is one of the major principles of our faith. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. God is one. We believe in the unity of God. In the same prayer which discusses the unity of God, Torah tells us, I will give grass in your fields for your cattle, and you will eat and you drink. Who eats first? The animal. If you have a pet in the house, it's very tough to have a pet. You got to feed your pet before you eat. It's one of the hard things to have a pet in the house. But drinking, you can drink first. That's also learned out from a verse in the Torah. Yeah. You can even interrupt doing a mitzvah to check if your animals have been fed. So in other words, a person just washed his hands for bread. Didn't eat the bread yet. He can ask someone, did you feed the animal? He's not allowed to eat before feeding the animal. There's another source which prohibits us from keeping an animal waiting for its food. The Bible tells us in Deuteronomy 24, you shall not oppress the hired servant that is poor and needy. Because you're not allowed to oppress the hired servant who is poor and needy. So the rabbi said this also applies to a poor and needy animal. The animal is poor and needy, and therefore you cannot oppress the animal. So it doesn't even end there. The rabbis didn't want anyone to buy an animal as a pet unless they could afford to provide for it. Today, look how many animals are just thrown out the house. And they end up in shelters and eventually end up being killed, basically. Today's society, we're living in a crazy society where the kids, Daddy, I want a dog. Daddy, I want a cat. Daddy, I want this. Daddy, I want that. Daddy goes out and buys it. 2 weeks later, they say, I'm fed up of it. Daddy has to look after it. But I can't look after it. So then we can the ASPCA, and that's where they come along, pick it up, and that's the end of that. The rabbis say, it's not allowed to do that. You can't just buy an animal. It's a long-term investment. It's not a short-term thing. So Rabbi Eliezer Kapar says, a person is not allowed to buy cattle, beast, or bird unless he can provide adequate food. Of all the verses in the Torah they use, interesting. The Bible tells us, it says, you should love your neighbor as yourself. I mean, that's a very famous verse. They construe this to mean that animals too should be dealt with as mercifully as possible. Imagine, love your neighbor as yourself, animals also. I mean, that's tough. Interesting. Not only that, it's interesting, there's a law in the Torah that says you will rest on the seventh day. One of the ideas Judaism gave to the world. Imagine Judaism. We're going to talk about November 22nd. Mark this down your calendars. We have a seminar. It's called World Perfect. What would the world be like without the Jewish people and the Bible? What would the world be like today? Hard to imagine. What would the world be like today? And one of the things, gifts, which the Bible has given to the world through the Jewish people, through the example, is the weekend. It's interesting. Think about it. Before the Torah came along and talked about a Sabbath, there was no concept of a Sabbath. 7 days a week, man toiled non-stop. Kill the mother and her young on the same day, or the father and the young on the same day. You will not take the bird, the baby bird, and its mother on the same at the same time. You will shoo away the mother and take the bird. You're not allowed to take the bird and the mother at the same time. This is part of the ethic of not causing cruelty to animals. The Sefer HaChinuch, as we mentioned, the Book of Education, says the purpose of these laws is to instill in us a goodness of heart and a sensitive concern for our fellow man and for the animals. Whereas if we are concerned about the welfare of the animal, how much more so we should be concerned about the welfare of other people? So the Torah is showing us clearly it's not concerned with our successful farming methods, it's more concerned with compassion. It's not just efficient farming, it's also ethical farming, where we're more concerned about the ethics, the morals involved in raising animals, rearing animals. The rabbis extend the anti-muzzle law of Deuteronomy to many other circumstances, including that an animal doesn't have to work if a thorn is stuck in its mouth. If it can't eat, you're not allowed to work the animal. If there's a lion lying nearby in wait and the animal's scared, you can't make the animal work. It's not concentrating on it, can't focus on its job. If its offspring was lying nearby and the animal's yearning for its offspring, you can't make the animal work. Let the animal go and look after its young. It's interesting. If the animal was thirsty, give it water. You're not allowed to work it without water. If you spread leather over the threshing floor, apparently that's bad for the animal fields. Look, I'm standing on a dead animal. Has an instinct, standing on a dead animal, standing on leather. If you shouted it, can you imagine? It is forbidden to shout the animal to make it work harder. Maybe except for a donkey. they don't want to work. Okay, in all these cases, the animal will be prevented from eating as it worked. And therefore, it's like putting a muzzle on it. If the animal has a thorn in its mouth, it's like it's a muzzle, it can't eat. If the animal, you put leather over the food, you can't eat the food. You're threshing it under the leather. You can't eat the food, you're preventing it from eating. All these cases were to stop the ox from eating. The Torah tells us you should not plow with an ox and a donkey together. Why? So one of the reasons is because the ox has more strength than the donkey. The donkey is straining to catch up. And the ox is overexerting. Instead of an equal animal pulling the plow at the same time, the ox has to pull much harder. And therefore, that's one of the reasons. When it comes to food, who comes first? So Torah is interesting. Torah talks about this. Where in the Shema? Which is one of the major principles of our faith. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. God is one. We believe in the unity of God. In the same prayer which discusses the unity of God, Torah tells us, I will give grass in your fields for your cattle, and you will eat and you drink. Who eats first? The animal. If you have a pet in the house, it's very tough to have a pet. You got to feed your pet before you eat. It's one of the hard things to have a pet in the house. But drinking, you can drink first. That's also learned out from a verse in the Torah. Yeah. You can even interrupt doing a mitzvah to check if your animals have been fed. So in other words, a person just washed his hands for bread. Didn't eat the bread yet. You can ask someone, did you feed the animal? He's not allowed to eat before feeding the animal. There's another source which prohibits us from keeping an animal waiting for its food. The Bible tells us in Deuteronomy 24, you shall not oppress the hired servant that is poor and needy. Because you're not allowed to oppress the hired servant who is poor and needy. So the rabbi said this also applies to a poor and needy animal. The animal is poor and needy, and therefore you cannot oppress the animal. So it doesn't even end there. The rabbis didn't want anyone to buy an animal as a pet unless they could afford to provide for it. Today, look how many animals are just thrown out the house. And they end up in shelters, and eventually they end up being killed, basically. Today's society, we're living in a crazy society where the kids, Daddy, I want a dog. Daddy, I want a cat. Daddy, I want this. Daddy, I want that. Daddy goes out and buys it. 2 weeks later, they say, I'm fed up of it. Daddy has to look after it. Like, I can't look after it. So then we can the ASPCA, and that's where they come along, pick it up, and that's the end of that. So rabbis say, it's not allowed to do that. You can't just buy an animal. It's a long-term investment. It's not a short-term thing. So Rabbi Eliezer HaKapar says, a person is not allowed to buy cattle, beast, or bird unless he can provide adequate food. For all the verses in the Torah they used, interesting. The Bible tells us, it says, you should love your neighbor as yourself. I mean, that's very famous words. They construe this to mean that animals too should be dealt with as mercifully as possible. Imagine, love your neighbor as yourself. Animals also. I mean, that's tough. Interesting. Not only that, it's interesting, there's a law in the Torah that says you will rest on the seventh day. One of the ideas Judaism gave to the world. Imagine Judaism. We're going to talk about November 22nd. Mark this down your calendars. We have a seminar. It's called World Perfect. What would the world be like without the Jewish people and the Bible? What would the world be like today? Hard to imagine. What would the world be like today? And one of the things, gifts, which the Bible has given to the world through the Jewish people, through the example, is the weekend. It's interesting. Think about it. Before the Torah came along and talked about a Sabbath, there was no concept of a Sabbath. 7 days a week, man toiled non-stop. And if the master wanted to take a day off, he took a day off and his slave continued working. His animals continued working. Jewish law comes along in the fourth commandment of the ten and says, you keep the Sabbath. Who keeps the Sabbath? You, your servant, your maidservant, and your animals. That is revolutionary. Not only are we giving, you know, it says the early pagans, they wrote about the Jewish people, he says they're crazy. Number one is, they believe in a God which is invisible. In those days, invisible means they didn't believe in a God. Because if it was invisible, it didn't exist. So number one is, they call the Jews atheists. Number two, they call the Jews very, very lazy people. Why? They took a day off every week. No one else did. To think of an economy which shuts down one day a week, even the slaves don't work. It's craziness. Right? It's like today. The markets are open 7 days a week in America. We're going back. We're reversing ourselves over back to what it was pre-Judaism. Pre-Ten Commandments. We want to change the laws now. But look, is society better off for it? Look around. Look how many stressed out people there are. 7 days. Running. 7 days a week. Is that good for society? I don't know. I don't think so. So one of the gifts the Torah gave us was this idea of the seven-day week. So the Christians came along and made it Sunday, so we have 2 days now. And you go, Muslims came along and made it Friday, all around the Shabbat. They can't make it Saturday because then they're too close to us. So Christians made it Sunday, the Muslims made it Friday, and then you have a three-day week. You go to Israel, you have a three-day week because the Muslims keep Friday, the Jews Shabbat, the rest of the world is closed on Sunday, you have a three-day week. So I think that was a joke. They asked Menachem Begin, they said, you know, officially in Israel you have a six-day week. People expected to go to work 6 days a week. They're coming down slowly. So they asked him, when are you guys going to start a five-day week? He says, very gradually. He says, first we'll work 1 day, then 2 days, then 3 days, then 4 days, then 5 days. In other words, the Jewish workers are very lazy. So first we'll work, even though it's officially a six-day week, they didn't even put in a full day's work. That's his joke. So we'll do it very gradually. We'll work up to 5 days a week. Anyway, so one of the ideas is, you shall not do any work. You, your children, your maids, your manservants, your ox, your ass, not any of your cattle. Animals too, get a day off. Interesting. Animals get a day off. It's in Exodus 20. Rashi says, animals must be free to roam on Shabbat, to graze freely and enjoy the beauty of nature. This is amazing. And if this applies to animals, how much more does it apply to humans? We have to be free one day a week to enjoy the beauty of nature. And it's hard to do in a town. You're living in a town, especially a big city. You know, it's interesting. You know, one thing struck me. I just had a visitor from England. I have a cousin, second cousin, who came to England last week. I'm taking her around the neighborhood. She says, very nice neighborhood, trees, isn't that? But she says, you know what? There's one thing missing over here which I don't see. I said, what is it? Flowers. Parks, okay. But they're all green, but there's no flowers. And she looked around her, and it's true. I never noticed, you know? I've been away from England for so long, it didn't even strike me, you know? Walking around, and you don't find, even people don't plant flower beds. It's all so utilitarian. This is America. Everything's utilitarian. You have a lawn, you're lucky you have a lawn. You have a lawn, you have a couple of trees, but flowers, that's too much work. I can't be bothered with flowers. I'd rather get a lawnmower, plug in the lawnmower, that's it's over. Flowers, you're going to work in the garden, that's too much already to expect. So I got a shock. Even the parks. You go to England, you have parks. In the parks are well-tended flowers. You don't find that here. It didn't even hit me. You go to Donaldson Park over here. You go to the other park, Johnson's Park. You don't see flowers. She's right. Boy, she opened my eyes. It just shows that a person can see and be blind. A certain part of us can be switched off, that facet of us. We're becoming too utilitarian over here. We're losing this touch with nature. It's a very important touch. So animals have got to rest, take a day off to get back to nature. How much more so we do? Something we're losing today is unfortunate. Both. There's two ways to God. There's two paths to God. What are the two paths to God? One path to God is through nature. See God's creation. And that you see, most of the great Jews were in those days were shepherds. Why shepherds? Because they had plenty of time in the outdoors, looking out after their sheep, looking at the sky. Look at King David, all the Psalms, praising God's nature. One of the ways, vehicles to God, is through nature. Yes, you're right. 2,000 feet outside, 2,000 amot outside the city. But you have 2,000 amot. Now, it's interesting. In Jewish law, every city had to have a green belt around it. How big? 2,000 amot. You're only allowed to walk that 2,000 amot in the green belt area. Because that was the idea, to keep you in that parkland outside the city. Not further than that. Otherwise, you start traveling on Shabbat. You defeat the purpose of Shabbat. Instead of using the Shabbat for recreation, a person would use the Shabbat and say, oh, I got Shabbat. Let me go and see my neighbor. Let me go and do a business deal. I'm going to walk for 2 days. So I'll start walking on Shabbat. I can walk on Shabbat. Yeah.
It's amazing how many tourists face
society. Yeah.
England.
Exactly.
The city is a
green belt. Right? 100%. We talked about the environment, all the environmental laws. Interesting. Most people think today that Judaism does not talk about environmental laws. We do. And a lot of the laws we have today in terms of town planning. I mentioned the Talmud thousands of years ago. But look at this law in terms of a Sabbath law, a Shabbat law. Which if we think about it, people think it's restrictive. What for? I'd rather do whatever I want. Try it. See which one is right. See what society has come to today. There's no concept of Shabbat. There's no Sabbath. People are running around like crazy 7 days a week. And are they really better off or not? That's the question. You know what? I thank God for Shabbat. Why? I don't answer the phone. It's great. Just keep away from answering the phone. Just not answering the phone. It's such a privilege, you know. You get this call. AT&T is want to sell you long distance. This one's trying to sell you this. They drive you crazy. You know what? Let the machine deal with this. That's it. I'm off. Fax machine, the computers, everything's off. It's so great. Peace of mind. Yeah, peace of mind. Get back to your family, your friends, your chat. Right? How's Shabbat around the table? Isn't that great? You come around the table, you sit in your chat. Hello? It's, don't do that the whole week. It's so tough. Yeah, the machine's working. Your machine, it's interesting. That's a big debate. Are your machines allowed to work on Shabbat? Beit Shammai says no. Beit Shammai says, if your animals can't work, your machines shouldn't work either. Beit Hillel, we follow Hillel. Hillel says your machines can work on Shabbat. So thank God for that. Otherwise, I mean, that's what saves religious Jews today is the timer. Thank God for the timer. You just sit back, you program your timers, the light goes on, the heat goes on, this thing goes on. Thank God for timers. If it wasn't for Hillel, we'd be stuck. Shammai says you can't use any machinery, you're stuck. Right. It's not an animal. Torah says explicitly an animal. It doesn't say machine. It doesn't say your vessels. It says your animals. So therefore, Hillel says, explicit. Just animals, it's enough what the Torah prohibited. It's enough for us. We don't have to keep on adding things and adding things. Otherwise, it just becomes impossible. Anything electrical is a machine. Anything which is works by electricity is a machine. You don't do anything on Shabbat, it works automatically, nothing wrong with it. The only problem there is one problem with the machine, while we're on the topic. In those days, the rabbis discussed a milling machine, a mill. Those mills, if you go to Holland, you'll see these windmills. Well, they had in those days in Israel, they had water mills, which worked by water power through the streams, hydropower. So the rabbi said, you can't have a water mill working on Shabbat. Why? Because everyone will hear the noise and they'll say the Jew is working on Shabbat. Because if the noise will get out. Suppose a factory, something heavy equipment which is working, like a person has heavy equipment working, and people might think the Jew is working on Shabbat. The Jew can't have that working on Shabbat because of what people might think. But really, it's really loud from the Torah law. The rabbis came along. They said people might think you're working, therefore don't keep switch it off. But things which don't make such a noise, and people know timers today is very frequent. The light goes off, the light goes on. People know it's a timer. No problem. Yes. Even if there wasn't, you're right. But even if there wasn't, it's still forbidden because of the noise, and therefore it can't be used. Say you put the grain in just before Shabbat. You're not allowed to do that. Why? Because people hear the noise and they say the Jews are working the machine. So therefore no one's allowed to go in the building, no one allows out the building, we don't want anyone to go near that building. Just in case. It's called Marit Ayin. We don't want people to suspect, be suspecting. But that's the idea of resting even the animals. Then we have another concept in Jewish law, which is called the seventh year, the sabbatical. Where did this idea of a sabbatical come from? Today, it's interesting, university professors have this idea. They barely work anyway, but they have a sabbatical. It's interesting. But the seventh year is sabbatical. What's sabbatical? The land lies fallow. Shemitah, in Israel. It's a law which applies in Israel. It's one of the proofs that the Bible could not be man-made. Because which crazy guy is going to come along and tell you, your whole economy shuts down 1 year out of seven? In those days, an agricultural society. You're not allowed to plant, you're not allowed to harvest, you're not allowed to do anything on the seventh year. What are we going to eat, God? God says, don't worry. The sixth year, you're going to have a bumper crop. I promise you. And which human being who's going to write a Bible is going to tell you, don't worry, the sixth year, I'm going to bless you with a bumper crop, and the seventh year, you're going to succeed. What's going to happen? That society is going to break down, basically. There's not going to be any food, there's going to be riots. Food riots happen in many countries, food riots. Country's going to dissolve. Well, this happened in Israel, and Israel lasted with the sabbatical year for 1,000 years. The first Commonwealth was around 1,000 years. From the time Joshua went into Israel till the Jews were kicked out by Babylonians, about 1,000 years. Nothing. Every 7 years they took the year off. Sabbatical. Hey, what are you doing, guys? We're on sabbatical. We don't plant, we don't reap, we don't harvest, we don't do anything. It's a sabbatical. 6 years you shall sow your land, Exodus 23. Gather your fruits, but the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow. Why? What happens to the fruit which is in the field? Everyone has rights to it. Anyone can come and take it. It's not just the owner of the field. Anyone can come and take it. So why? Because the poor shall eat. And what they leave, the beast of the fields shall eat. The animals can eat. Animals can graze freely. So it's interesting. Everyone gets a break. Every 7 years, the whole society gets a break. Tremendous. They get back to the spiritual. They have time off. They hit the books for a year every 7 years. That's what the real sabbatical is for. Today, okay, it's in colleges. What about the rest of society? We're working like dogs. Working like dogs every year. This is my sabbatical year. No, last year was my sabbatical year. But, so that's the irony of the situation. Is the sabbatical, the idea of the sabbatical is a Jewish concept. 1 year off every 7 years. So it's, there's all sorts of ramifications over here in terms of helping animals, not be barbaric. The other one is, if you see your enemy's donkey stressed, it's suffering under a load. The load is either it's too much for the animal or it's uneven. The Bible tells us, do not pass by. Help it with its load. Alleviate its pain. Why? That's Tsar Balei Chaim. Similarly, a person must be vigilant for the well-being of a lost animal. See a lost animal. It's amazing. Animal in distress. How much more so people in distress, as I said. So that's interesting, the idea of, so another ethic in terms of eating is not being cruel to the animal. We find also there's an interesting law in Jewish law. It's forbidden to wear leather shoes on Yom Kippur. Why are we not allowed to wear leather shoes on Yom Kippur? Because it is not proper to plead for compassion when one has not shown compassion towards other living creatures. When Yom Kippur, we're pleading for compassion from God. Here we are, God, we're wearing leather shoes. It shows we killed the animal to wear shoes. And we were asking you for compassion. Please have mercy on us. So we don't wear leather shoes. We say She'echiyanu, which is a blessing on something new. However, the garment is made of leather. Many rabbis hold we do not say the blessing on something which is made of leather. Why? Because, say, a person buys a mink coat. You say She'echiyanu, and the answer is no. There's no She'echiyanu mink coat, because many animals die to make that coat. So it's interesting. What about veal? Rav Moshe Feinstein, who is one of the great American rabbis, he died in 1985. He ruled in 1982, it is forbidden to raise veal calves because of cruelty to animals. Forbidden to raise them. Not to eat them, but to raise them. The guys who are raising them are doing the prohibition. They're going to raise them anyway. They're going to raise them whether for Jews or non-Jews, but it's forbidden to raise them. For a Jew to raise them, it's forbidden. And he says, pious people should not eat veal, because there is a high probability that it is not kosher. It is still anemic, only between 15% to 45% are kosher. But still, he says, people should not eat it. The merchants of veal must be careful not to commit fraud. The veal is usually sold as healthy or better quality, or milk-fed. In reality, it is a fatty, anemic animal. Therefore, a Jew, the pious Jew should not eat veal. Interesting. So most people, when faced with these issues, ask rather naively, I'm not raising the animals or veal calves, I'm just eating them. What is wrong? The Talmud says, do not strengthen the hands of those who are doing a sin. If someone's doing a sin, don't strengthen them and say, you know what, I'm going to help you, I'm going to support you. What about force-fed birds and large livers? There's one of the delicacies in France. Enlarged livers of geese. Geese are kosher. Geese and ducks are kosher animals. These birds are force-fed. The livers are fattened by having 60 to 80 pounds of corn inserted by force down its gullet. The farmer holds the neck of the goose between his legs. I don't want to say it. But plunges the food down his throat. And the bird suffers unimaginable pain. After 25 days of such agony, it is killed and the gigantic liver is removed. Currently, the machines which are used to force-feed these animals. Again, pious Jew should not involve himself in that. We have fur coats. It is important to first explain the fur process. Wild animals are caught in bone-crushing leg-hold traps. Today they have different methods now. They're farming the seal. What are they farming? All these things. But in those days they were clubbed, they were crushed. Rabbits and raccoons are raised on fur farms and then hung by their tongues to produce a scar-free fur. Best way to kill them. It takes torturous death of many animals in order to produce one fur coat. It takes 62 minks, 11 foxes, 11 beavers, and 13 lynxes. 100 countries banned the use of the steel jaw leg hole trap, but not the good old USA. There's only one rabbi that prohibits the Jewish people from contributing to the cruelty and wearing fur. The current chief rabbi of Tel Aviv says Jews should not wear fur because of this reason. He did the research. Many rabbis are unaware of this problem. He did the research and came to the conclusion it is prohibited to wear fur. So this ethic is not just for food, but it's also an ethic which goes further than food. It also goes to... Let's just go a bit further. Time's nearly up. The first law given to man was a dietary law. God told man, don't eat from the fruit of this tree. Okay? The woman perceived that the tree was good for eating. It was a delight to the eyes. So she took of its fruit and ate. If you look at it, it's in Genesis 3, verse 6. So what do we see over there? Food is enticing. And this is one of the problems with food. The question we have to ask ourselves, what is the major Jewish ethic in food is, do we eat to live or live to eat? And the Jewish ethic is, in terms of food, is we eat to live. Our main purpose of eating is to live healthy, happy, fulfilling lives. That is the purpose of eating. The purpose of the food is not for a craving. And that was one of the first problems we see right at the beginning of Genesis, is it was good for the eyes. And that's where a person can go astray, is going after food which is good for the eyes, but not necessarily good for the body. Now, what's interesting is Adam and Eve were totally vegetarian. God tells them explicitly that I've given to you all the trees in the garden for food. Then we find with Noah, God tells Noah, every moving thing that lives shall be food for you, like the green herbage, I've given you everything. But flesh with its soul, its blood you shall not eat. Okay? So Noah was allowed to eat animals, but with the exception of a living part of the animal. In other words, a limb from a living animal is not allowed to be eaten by Bnei Noach. So any person, that part of dietary law today is any living creature, you can't eat a limb from it. Then we find the Jews in the wilderness, as I mentioned, they come out of Egypt and the matzahs run out. They run out of matzah, they start crying, we need food, we need food. What happens? God gives them vegetarian food, totally vegetarian food, no meat supply, and he gave them manna. And what's interesting is one of the ways he educated them about the Shabbat was that the manna would fall only 6 days a week, and on the sixth day he said to take a double portion. And that's why the reason on Friday night we make Kiddush on two challahs. Why do we have two? The reason for two challahs on the Friday night table is to show that the manna fell, double portion fell on Friday for the Sabbath. So we have two loaves of bread on Friday night to show that a double portion fell on Friday for the Shabbat. And this was educational, that the Jews saw in the desert, the food fell 6 days, the heavens even rest on the seventh day. Everything rests on the seventh day. They're living in a very ideal society. Everything came to a stop on the seventh day. So Moses told them, take a double portion on the Friday, and that's it. So what happened? They gathered a double portion of food. But what I want to point out is this food was a healthy kind of diet. The God gave them exactly what they needed. Each one got the same allocation, and nothing was left over. They ate every day, nothing was left over. Then towards the end of the journey, it says the people took to seeking